Talk with Maria Bailey. Join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. From the cradle to college, Maria and her expert guests offer information, tips, and tools to make the busy lives of families easier. Now, here's your host, Maria Bailey.
So it's back to school season, and that means you're back to what I like to call is Mom's New Year's Day. The day that your kids go back to school is the day that sets your schedule for the rest of the year. Most everybody celebrates New Year's Day on January 1st, but for a mom, it really happens that first day of school. I'm sure you will agree with me. That's when we start our diets, we start our new routines, we try to start figuring out what we're making for lunch. Well, my daughter, speaking of making lunches, so we're into week one of making lunches, and I've already run out of ideas. I swore this wasn't going to happen, but it did, and I'm already out of ideas, so that means I have, what, 26 more weeks of trying to get through making lunches and being creative. It's just, I don't know. Her new thing is she doesn't want to eat bread. So now I'm just taking lunch meat and rolling it up. The only problem is she only eats one kind of lunch meat. So I'm like, well, this is really terrible and yucky. But anyways, I'm going to struggle through it, as you will. But the one thing you won't have to struggle through is the next hour here on Mom Talk Radio, because we have really, really great guests booked for you. We're going to be talking about a lot of interesting things, from what great parents do and 75 simple strategies for raising kids to a spotlight on a mom who's doing pretty amazing things in her own community. And as always, all of this great content is brought to you by Premama. Premama is the supplement, the flavorless prenatal vitamin that you can put right into your juice. And now they've extended into other areas, including fertility and lactation. It's a product line for your complete maternal wellness. And you can get it online by going to drinkpremama.com. You can also get it at CVS, Target, Amazon, and other specialty stores. So check it out and tell them Mom Talk Radio sent you when you find it. Anyways, so let's talk a little bit real quickly about what's going on in the world right now. So if you've gone shopping, not only among the backpacks and the pencils and the back to school, but you've also probably gotten a glimpse of Halloween. I don't know why they do this to us, but Halloween, it's August, is already in the stores, and it makes you want to decorate. But in my neck of the woods in Florida, it's still 99 degrees. So even though I was so tempted, I bought this really beautiful fall wreath at the at-home store that I was visiting this week. And if you haven't been to an at-home store, but you've seen it from the outside and you've wondered what's inside, do yourself a favor and go in there before the holiday season. Amazing decorations and home decor, and they are so inexpensive. So anyways, I got this beautiful wreath. I brought it home, and I was going to take down I think it had white flowers in it, wreath off my door. And I'm standing there in a bathing suit about to take the wreath off my door, and I'm like, it's August. I can't put the fall wreath up yet. So I put it in my closet, and I'm looking forward to putting my fall wreath up when the weather at least goes below 80 here in Florida. So we are going to take a short break, and when we return, we're going to talk with the author of What Great Parents Do, 75 Simple Strategies for Raising Kids Who Thrive.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
I am delighted to have with us today Dr. Erica Reicher. She is the author of the newly released book, What Great Parents Do, 75 Simple Strategies for Raising Kids Who Thrive. She's a clinical psychologist and parent educator based in Oakland, California. She has her doctorate degree, and she graduated from Princeton and the University of Chicago. She's doing amazing things, and now she is in the Bay Area. She sits on the advisory board of HappyHealthyKids.com and leads parenting classes and workshops in the Bay Area. So welcome, Erica, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I love the title of your book, and it makes me think that raising healthy, happy children who thrive isn't something that just happens by accident.
Well, you know, it's funny because the subtitle does focus on kids, you know, raising kids who thrive. But I really, you know, the main title, What Great Parents Do, is also very much about creating a happy family life, right? Uh-huh. Because I do, you know, there's a lot of research that suggests that, you know, parents do have an impact on kids, of course. But, you know, kids are very resilient in general. And so I think it's even more important to focus also on what kind of family environment you're creating. And, you know, can our parenting journey be full of joy and ease? And can it feel like, you know, enjoyable, I think, a lot of the times. And I think a lot of times in the hectic rush of day-to-day life with our families, getting kids out the door and then back home and dinner and bedtime, bath time and all that stuff, it can feel very hectic and stressful. And there are ways to handle those everyday situations in a way that doesn't make things feel like they are so hard or challenging.
So you're talking about beyond just the, I guess, effects of your children on that, because my husband loves to remind me almost on a daily basis, you're only as happy as your most unhappiest child. But what you're talking about is finding the joy in the actual parenting journey and those moments when maybe your child isn't very happy and you're not happy as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, parenting is challenging, and we're all up against these kind of what I call the short game of parenting, right? And that's, when I say the short game, I mean problem solving, these everyday challenging behaviors that we get with kids, you know, the whining and the not cooperating and the ignoring and the not listening, maybe tantrums if we have younger kids. And so there's better ways to get through those situations with more skill. You know, I think of parenting as a skill. It's not about being a good parent or a bad parent. It's really about being skillful. And there are a lot of really concrete, specific skills can help you handle those situations so that we're not resorting to yelling or nagging or even, you know, being aggressive in other ways with our kids.
So give me an example of some of those strategies and behaviors that we could adopt.
Well, there's some really simple ones. So the thing about the book that is, I think, different about this compared to other parenting books is it's very short. I originally called it the Small Book of Big Parenting Ideas, and it's organized in a way that gives you just really bite-sized summaries of parenting best practices, you know, the most useful information about the art and science of parenting. And so each of these 75 strategies that the book is talking about are just one or two pages each on average. Some of them are even shorter. The longest one is, I think, 3 or 4 pages. So you're looking at one or two pages per idea. It'll give you the big idea. It'll give you an example. And then there's a section called Try This that will tell you how to put that into practice in your family, you know, what to say, how to say it with suggestions, as if you were looking over the shoulder of someone that you thought was a really skillful parent. You know, what is he or she saying, right? And I think we learn a lot like that when we can overhear or watch somebody in action and say, oh, that worked really well. So that's how it's organized. So let me give you maybe a more complicated one, and then if we have time, I can give you a simple one. So one of my favorite ones is this idea of looking at goals and methods, right? So, you know, imagine a situation where you're cooking dinner and your toddler comes in and they ask for a glass of milk, but you're really busy. There's stuff boiling over and you've got like 5 pans going. So you say, you know, some version of no, or not right now, or just a minute, honey. But they're young and they're hungry and they're not really good at waiting like most toddlers. And so they escalate, maybe start whining or grabbing your leg. Let's say they're whining, you know, no, I want it now, right? It can be really tempting in that moment to just pass them the glass of milk so they'll be quiet and leave the room so you can keep cooking dinner. But if we do that, we've solved our short-term problem of the whining child who's keeping us from finishing dinner, but we've created potentially a longer-term problem of reinforcing whining because they're leaving the kitchen thinking, well, that worked, or some version of that, right? So we just reinforce the whining. Instead, if we see that moment and say, okay, what's the goal and what's the method happening here? In the example that I use, the goal is milk, right? Getting a glass of milk. But remember, in general, goals can be something tangible like a glass of milk or more screen time or ice cream or dessert, but it can also be intangible like privacy or attention, right? So keep in mind that children's goals are very broad. But once we can identify that goal, we can then look at, well, how are they trying to achieve this goal, right? And in this example that I use, the method is whining, right? Interrupting whining, badgering you, whatever. So I used whining as a method. So when we see that behavior and we think about goals and methods, we can appreciate that there's nothing wrong with the goal. And in most cases, that's true. But we need to help them achieve that goal through a better method, which right. we can tell them what to do. We can actually, especially with young kids, you know, with older kids discussing, I recommend. But with younger kids, you just have to kind of say, why don't you try it this way? So that's in the book, another strategy called a replay, where you tell them exactly what kind of alternative behavior they can use to be successful. The only thing to remember, if you give them an alternative, it can't just be something, it has to be something that's better. But you couldn't right. say to a three-year-old something like, well, I need you to go wait for 10 minutes. And while you're at it, can you clean the living room? Because that's right. not going to work. Right. So you have to make sure that what you propose is something they can do successfully based on their age and developmental
stage. The best advice I ever got is something really similar to that. So I had three children in less than 20 months. And I remember going to the grocery store. It was just so, so crazy. And I remember someone gave me similar advice and said, you know, you can't just tell your child, okay, when we go into the grocery store, I want you to behave, because you have to kind of define that.
Right, exactly.
Because they don't know what behave means, you know, like, or what your expectations are. And I remember changing how I said that, like, when we go in the grocery store, I expect you to sit in the cart and not touch anything on the shelves. And like, my life changed just by that definition.
Right, right. Because when we're specific with kids, we're really clear about what we're thinking. To us, when we say please behave, we know what we mean, but they don't always know what we mean. And related to that point you just brought up is this idea that when we tell our kids stop that or don't do that, it's kind of the same thing. We need to tell them what to do specifically.
Right, right. Well, really great stuff. And we're unfortunately out of time, but I want to encourage everyone to go to your website. So can you give it to us really quick?
Sure. It's drericar.com. That's drericar.com. Dr. Erica R.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. The book is called What Great Parents Do, 75 Simple Strategies for Raising Kids Who Thrive. And we have a link on Mom Talk Radio. When we return, we're going to visit with Dusty Pendleton. She's the mom in our spotlight this week. Excited to have on Mom Talk Radio today a mom that I have known for many years in the cyberspace. She is Dusty Pendleton, the mother of two. She has a website and a blog as momseesit.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at the same identity. And I'm really excited to have Dusty with us today. Hey, Dusty.
Hello, how are you?
So I'm doing great. And like most moms, you're spending a lot of time in your car. I'm happy that I'm not in mine right now. But I thought about the things that we could talk about today. And one of the interesting things about you is that you have kids that are 10 years apart. And mine were all concentrated. I was just saying to the last guest that I had three under 20 months, but you kind of spread yours out a little bit further. How did it feel when you started over? Like, when you have a 10-year-old, you just feel like you're getting to the finish line.
That's exactly how I felt. It was one of those kind of normals in our life where he was getting to the age where he was able to make his own bowl of cereal. He was able to get himself dressed for school. He kind of had sports and, you know, I mean, even though he was 10 years old, he kind of had his own life forming. And I got maybe a little taste of that freedom, not necessarily from motherhood, but just a lot more of the responsibilities that come with having younger kids. And then I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, and there was this fear of, oh my God, can I really do this again? Can I do this in my 30s? Can I make all of this work? And then there was that excitement where, okay, we have a built-in babysitter. This really could work. We can do And that's actually not the case, because they don't get along at all.
Oh, no. So Are there moments, though, where they do get along? And are there things that you've learned that have helped them get used to each other?
The difficult thing is finding things that they can do together, because there is that huge age group, and then also our oldest is a boy, our youngest is a girl, and so that's kind of a lot of the challenges that we cover on our site. But there are times where it's very sweet, and it's very much like I hoped it would be. And then there are times where you physically have to keep them separated because, you know, there comes that jealousy. I think with any sibling relationship where, you know, one is a little jealous of the attention that the other one is getting, and it will be like that because one is very young and requires a lot of attention, and one is older and requires a completely different skill set when it comes to parenting.
And so you mentioned on your site, what will moms and dads find on your site?
Well, we have a lot of crafts that kids can do, whether they're 10 or 16 or 5. We do a lot of traveling where places that we go will have something for younger kids and for older kids. We do recipes that older kids can help with some of the tasks, and even younger kids can help with some of the tasks. And then we cover a lot of product reviews that are products that are good for the whole family, whether it's for mom, dad, the little ones, or the older ones.
So as we just have 2 minutes left, as we move back into the school season, what's your best or your favorite, I guess, tip or hack to make back to school season more, I guess, easier on your family?
Oh boy, I wish I had the easiest tips. I think we're still kind of trying to navigate our way through it because we have one in high school and one that just started kindergarten this year. Staying, you know, finding a way that makes you organized, and then keeping it that way, getting your kids into the habit of staying organized. And so if they get into a routine, they're more likely to stick with it. So, you know,
even
though day-to-day changes, routines are key.
Yes, absolutely. Even when we get to be adults. So your website is asmomseesit.com. We have a link on Mom Talk Radio. Dusty, thank you for spending some of your day with us. I know you're very busy as a mom of two. And I hope you have a great school year in the coming weeks and months. And when we return, we're going to be talking with two authors of a new book called Rhyme to Read.
Succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
I'd like to welcome today Lynn Clayman. She is the co-author of a new book, Rhyme to Read. She has a master's degree in education and reading. She's worked with both private and public schools for the last 20 years. And currently she's a lower school teaching specialist at Georgetown Day School in Washington, D.C. We're excited to talk to her as we move back into the school season, where reading is so important to the fundamentals of your child's education. So welcome, Lynn, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about the Rhyme to Read program.
Okay. So Sarah and I, my co-author and I, met many years ago, about 15 years ago. We were both teaching at a school in Washington, D.C., and we were very aware that parents were asking us often for books for them to buy for their kids to practice reading at home. And we really felt that there was a hole in the market for good readers for parents to use at home with their kids. So we wrote our own set of readers, a 20-book set. And we self-published those and sold those, and people really loved them. And then when the app craze started coming about, we thought, well, we have this great content. Let's turn it into an app. So about 3 years ago, we turned our Learn to Read program into an app. So the whole thing is there. You can download it from iTunes, and it's 20 little books. And we're really excited about it.
Books, so what makes the books different, or what is the philosophy and strategy that the books are based on?
Well, very often when a parent will go to a bookstore and look for a book for their child who's just beginning to learn to read, it's pretty confusing. There's a lot of books out there, and oftentimes, you know, they'll say reading level one or reading level two, and there's no real leveling system for those. But really what you find is often those books are just, they make the font really big and they use less words and they call it a learn to read book, but there's no real, they don't really choose the words in the book in an appropriate way for kids to learn to read. So we created a program where kids learn little by little. So our program is cumulative, and it's based on word families. So the first book is at words, and the child learns a whole bunch of words, at, sat, cat, rat. And those words are color-coded. So then as they appear in subsequent books, because the subsequent books, although teaching new word families, are cumulative, so those words keep reappearing, they'll stay in the color they originated in, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So by book six, you're working on the ET word family. But those ET words...
So the age of this app and the program is what, like
Four to seven. Kindergarten,
okay.
Really. And for some kids who are early readers, four.
So when you work through the eight books, are there games as well as the reading?
No, it's just readers. We felt like, although this is an age of technology and we're excited to be able to bring our program to people through technology, we still wanted it to be books. They're still really just books. The only interactive quality about them is you can touch a word and hear it read aloud for you if the child is working on it by themselves and isn't sure of the word. She can touch the word and it will be read out loud. But basically, they're just books in digital form because we wanted to stay true to a child reading a book.
And is there a cost to the app?
Yes, the app, it's actually available in two versions. The first version is for people who just want to give it a try without making a purchase, and that one you can download the first four of the 20 books for free. So you can give those first four books a try, and if you like it, then you can purchase the app. And the second version, you just buy the whole app.
Well, that's really interesting, and it sounds so innovative. So what are you finding that kids and moms like best about the app?
Well, I think they like the feeling of success that the kids seem to have right away. Even after the first book, I mean, I'm a teacher and I've been using these books for years and years. As I said, they were in print form first. And I have kids who we go through the first book and they look at me and their eyes light up and they're like, I can read. And you're just, it's fun and it's exciting for the parent or teacher to sort of witness that and share that exciting part, that time of their life with them, because they're set up for success. Kids feel successful right away.
Right. And where can moms go to find the app?
They can find it on iTunes. It's for iPads, not for iPhones. It would be too small on iPhones, so we just made it for iPads. And so you can download it from the App Store for iPads.
Well, and you have a website, rhymetoread.com, which we'll have a link on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today on Mom Talk, and good luck with the app. And moms, you might want to check it out, particularly if you have a younger child just about to read. When we return, we're going to be talking with the author of Raising Can-Do Kids.
podcast for busy moms. Mom Talk Radio.
I am delighted to have with us today Dr. Richard Rendy. He is the author of Raising Can-Do Kids. He's a developmental psychologist, a researcher, educator, and consultant. And as a research professor at Brown University, he led many large-scale scientific projects on child development and parenting. And he has been seen on just about everywhere, Parents.com, ABC News, NPR, Yahoo, and now Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Richard, to Mom Talk.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
I want to, like, now be in your bio listed with all the CNNs and MSNBCs.
Front and center.
So you have cracked the solution of raising can-do kids. How does that happen?
Well, you know what? I think we have to a degree, and we don't take full credit for it, but I think there's a lot of consensus right now that we're at a point where moms and dads can take a fresh look at how they're raising their kids. And part of it is dialing back to things that we did when we were growing up, which is, you know, this idea of raising a can-do kid has a little retro feel to it. I think intuitively, you know, we think about how much free time we had, how much time we had for play, how much, you know, we could build up our social competencies, our resilience and all that. But I think it's also cast in a framework of both new science, and there's a lot of new science in the book that helps us understand why those things are important. And also, as I wrote the book with Jen Prosek, who's an entrepreneur, we're of the mindset that these are skills that kids are really, really going to need when they get out into the world. They've always been important skills, but, you know, we talk about them as entrepreneurial skills because we think kids, no matter what they do, are going to, they don't have to be entrepreneurs when they grow up and leave the home, but they're all going to have to be entrepreneurial in terms of making right. their way in the world and navigating a future that we don't even know what it's going to look like. We don't even know what, you know, the jobs are going to be like. We couldn't predict it. And that's why we use the more than the analogy, but the model of an entrepreneur who's used to sort of navigating the unknown. And I think, you know, I'll sum up by saying so much of parenting or the messages that parents have gotten has been, you know, to help kids build up these incredible resumes of accomplishments to get into a college that will then get them a job and then they'll be all set. And we don't think that's the case. We think the way they're going to be all set is to be able to take on a sort of unknown and a little scary world, but to take it on in a way that they'll be able to embrace that challenge and know how to take care of themselves.
So how do you think technology plays in this can-do attitude? Because do you think it's the fact that kids have that instant gratification? Does that play into it as well?
You know, a lot of people speculate on that. I honestly don't think that. I think that's more of a sort of a consequence of how they're living rather than as a causal factor. I think, you know, the way they use technology, it's both good and bad, right? I mean, they have incredible capacities that, you know, certainly many of us didn't grow up with. They have an intuitive understanding of it. I think, though, that it's not integrated enough in a meaningful way into their life. So I'll just give you a quick example. I have a hobby as a songwriter. I teach songwriting classes. And, you know, I talk to kids about how they can, you know, the instant gratification, right? You can stream, you can find any kind of song you want. You can listen to it for 2 seconds, get rid of it. Mm-hmm. It's not like when I was growing up, you had a radio dial and 3 stations that came in, you know. You ended up having to stick with some songs. But in songwriting, we talk about, you know, well, just because you can scan through so quickly, you know, take the time to start, you know, sort of assimilating what you're hearing and thinking about the songs that you like and the songs that you don't like and do something with all that information, because that's essentially the model of what's going to happen. So I don't think it's so much instant gratification. I think kids are just sort of brought up in a world where they're reinforced for achieving things.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think it has to do with what's happening in their free time. They don't have that much of it.
So let me ask you, as you look at this entrepreneurial spirit, where does a parent start in trying to ingrain that in their children? And ingrain probably isn't the instill might be a better word.
Yeah, well, you know, when we think about kids, even though we talk a lot about kids being overstructured, and there's certainly no downside to having some structured activities, you know, whether it's playing sports or learning piano, and I don't care if you're 2 or 15, right? But if you're overstructured, if everything you're doing is structured, you're depriving kids of an opportunity to just sort of mess around, to have free time, to figure out what they like and what they don't like. That's where all the creativity happens in a kid's brain growing up. So that's one thing, is to sort of trust again in this idea that kids should have free time. You know, you're going to have to monitor it. You mentioned, you know, technology use. If you're just sort of mindlessly sitting there on your device for 4 hours, that might not be the best use. But, you know, help kids find interesting things to do with that time and make sure they have some balance in their time so they have kind of a wide palette. Also, I think you have to let kids seek out opportunities. We talk a lot about risk-taking and failure, and honestly, I'm sort of bored with that conversation. I think it falls off the tracks. We really want kids to be able to try a bunch of things out, right? And not worry so much about, am I great at it or not? Because eventually, they're going to be their own brand, right? So give them a chance to try out different things. Don't worry about, are they going to be the star or are they going to get an A? Give them a chance to just kind of try things out and be kids, but to have a little sense of get up and go. And finally, it's going to sound like a silly thing, but you know what? Doing household responsibilities and chores and things like that. You know, we talk about kids being entitled. Kids are trained to work really hard, but at specific things, right? They're trained to work really hard to get great at sports or school, right, or whatever it is. They're not trained to work really hard to sort of, you know, pick up after themselves. And, you know, you don't have to follow them around and turn it into a draconian experience, but you want them to internalize that, you know what, a work ethic is going to be important when you get out into the world, and you're not going to be a superstar when you get out in the world, and people are going to want you to take on lousy, dirty jobs and understand why they're important. You should be equipped to do that.
That's right. Well, I don't have a lousy job because I got to spend time with you today on Mom Talk Radio. I want to remind everyone that you can pick up the book Raising Can-Do Kids. It's on Amazon and many more book sites, and we have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you so much, Doctor, for being with us today, and we hope everyone gets a copy of the book because it's got some really good tips for raising that can-do kid. When we return, we're going to be talking with a neurologist from the Phoenix Children's Medical Group. Is going to love this segment. That's because we're going to talk about teenagers and sleep. And we brought in an expert, Dr. Matthew Traister. He is a neurologist at Phoenix Children's Medical Group. Welcome, Dr. Traister, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad you're here because you can settle up a happy discussion in our house between my husband and I. One of us believes that teenagers do need sleep, and one believes that sleep is overrated and we can sleep when we die. And my daughter, my poor teenage daughter, is like, oh, please, I need sleep. So what is it? How much sleep does a teenager really need?
Well, teenagers should strive to get about 8 to 10 hours of sleep to promote optimal health. So they definitely need sleep. So you win that argument if that was yours.
Yes, it was. It was. So it's amazing because the kids get to be about 14 or 15 and suddenly they're asking for blackout drapes in their rooms, and sleep becomes so very important. Why is that teenagers go through that phase?
So sleep's, you know, really particularly important for teens because they're really vulnerable to sleep deprivation. There's this natural shift or kind of a delay in the internal clock, or what we call the circadian rhythm, which occurs in teenagers where their bodies really want to go to bed much later at night, and they don't want to wake up until much later in the morning. And this is completely contrary to typical school start times, which are often very early relative to this shifted clock. So the discrepancy is a perfect setup for sleep loss. And that's why they want the blackout drapes, is so they can sleep in.
They don't need, I mean, like the argument that they need to sleep till 2 or 3 in the afternoon, which I don't even understand how anyone sleeps that late. It's not that they're going through a growth spurt or anything like that.
No, the main problem with teenagers is that shift in that internal clock. That's the main problem. They don't need more sleep or less sleep. The time their body wants to get sleep has just sort of shifted.
And when does it shift back?
Usually like around late teenage years or like early adulthood, like certainly by 22 or so, but usually around that age.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing that I know one of my children actually has just gone through that shift back, because she gets up at like 5 o'clock now. And then I'm like, what happened to you? And she's like up and exercising at 5 o'clock. How else can we help our kids get that good night's sleep besides just telling them, like, turn off the Netflix and stop Skyping at 11 o'clock and get to sleep?
Well, that's still really good advice. I think the best things that we can do to help promote healthy sleep habits in kids is to, one, be a good sleep role model, and two, is like set and enforce, you know, bedtime rules. I think that being a good sleep role model means that we maintain a stable bedtime ourselves. We maintain a stable awakening time even on weekends. We don't use our beds or bedrooms for anything but sleep. We turn off our screens and devices an hour before we want to go to bed, and we try to exercise during the day, and we try to avoid caffeine in the afternoon. And I think by being a good model, we can do a lot. But when it comes to sleep, I don't think you can be the, you know, the cool parent. We have to enforce screen time limits at night and insist on regular bedtimes and routine. And when your kid says, "I'm not tired," we have to say, "I know. It's because your internal clock is messed up right now. And I heard some random sleep doctor on the radio talking about it. Now go to bed anyway." And by setting and maintaining a regular sleep routine, you know, the goal of which is to get as much sleep as you can, then we'll set up our teenagers to be as like successful and recharged as possible.
So we just have less than 2 minutes left. Is there a way to, even though our internal clock is saying that it has shifted, is it there a way to work against it? Like, I don't know, warm milk before you lay down in the dark room to help you go to sleep? I mean, if your body's telling you you're not tired or you're not ready to sleep, how do you get it to go to sleep?
The best thing you can do is slowly, slowly advance your bedtime. So if your child doesn't really want to fall asleep until it's 11:30 or midnight, you know, just slowly start moving it back, you know, every few days. Try to move it back by 10 or 15 minutes. That's one way to do it. The other way is just to expose your kid to really bright light in the mornings. When they're, even if they're asleep, just open up all the blinds, turn on the lights, and just expose them to bright light. That bright light exposure in the morning can also help shift that delayed sleep rhythm a little bit as well.
Well, really great advice. And is there a website where we can go for help?
Yeah, I think the best place to look is an American Academy of Sleep Medicine website called sleepeducation.org. It's filled with great factoids about all kinds of sleep issues. And at the bottom left-hand corner of the homepage, there's a little search box where you can find an accredited sleep center near you to answer any lingering questions you might have.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Traister, for being with us today. And remember, teenagers need 8 to 12 hours of sleep. And remember that when they're sleeping, you have the opportunity to sleep as well. I'm Maria Bailey. I'm glad you didn't sleep through my show today, but I'll see you again next week, same time, same place. And have a great week, everyone.